Hey, welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich Davenport, and playing the part of my wife, Jen Davenport, will be Paul Moderman this week. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great, and like I'm slipping back into this role. It's comfortable. It's like a glove. It's like my favorite, you know, it's like my favorite hoodie. Like I like the role of your wife is it's a warm and cozy thing for me.
Beautiful.
So I'm glad to be back here.
Awesome. This week, you know, Jen was going to talk about this movie with me, but tax season being what it is, Jen just doesn't have the time to go and see this movie, much to her chagrin. We're talking about The Batman, and as such, we are going to spoil this movie as much as we possibly can. So
super spoiled.
Yeah. And might even spoil like source material that this is based on. So caution flags up, guys. If you haven't seen this movie, don't listen to us now unless care about
it. Here's the thing. I think maybe just a blanket. If you haven't seen a movie, or haven't read a book or comic book, or heard music or viewed art, maybe don't listen to this episode.
Yeah.
Because we're probably going to spoil that thing.
Right.
Yeah. So just go ahead, finish your complete like to-do list art wise, then come back to this episode and listen, because otherwise it's just going to be spoiled.
I mean, look, this, everything's connected. Recent cinema has ever taught us anything, it is that everything is connected. So it's all coming back to this.
Yeah.
It's all coming back. It's the St. Elsewhere thing, right? We talked about that, right? Mm-hmm. So The Batman. Okay, so usually what I do is I ask people, like, have you seen this movie before? But, well, it's kind of hard to have seen this movie before. Yeah. We watched it for this. So let me ask you this question. What is your Batman history?
So I have seen all of the major studio Batman films.
Okay.
Prior to seeing this, the Chris Nolan Batman stuff was my favorite stuff.
Okay.
Batman wise. I haven't seen much of like any animated stuff really.
Sure.
I heard that some of it's pretty good, but I haven't seen it. You know, my comics intake is probably more into the Marvel realm than it is into the DC realm.
Sure.
So anything Batman I've read has tended to be like as part of like a Justice League thing. Batman in Justice League is this weird thing, right? Yeah. Because the Justice League steps onto the battlefield, and then also Batman. And like, you're like, that's not his thing. That's not like,
right.
I saw a clip of some movie where, and I think it was based on a Superman comic. It was when it's a recent, relatively recent, like Supergirl kind of retelling where Supergirl shows up and she's got the Kara Zor-El blonde thing going on. Mm-hmm. And at one point they send her to Themyscira to sort of like learn about being a woman and all that kind of stuff from the women there. And Superman and Batman go there for some reason. I don't know why. And when they do, a boom tube opens up and like 50 doomsdays spill out. Right. And you're like, that's pretty bad.
Because that seems like trouble.
That's, you know, not an ideal day at the beach.
Sure.
At Themyscira Beach.
Not even on a Themyscira Beach. Yeah.
Not even on a Themyscira Beach, right? Nope. That's been ruined. They set right to kicking sand in every sandcastle. And but the thing is 50 or 100 or whatever doomsdays appear out of this boom tube, and Batman's like, let's go. And you're like, Batman has no, there's no, that makes no sense, because until you find out that they're not like full powered, you know, doomsday creatures, you're like, that's the thing that killed Superman.
Right.
What business does Batman have saying, I know, I'll throw some batarangs at it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's absurd. Completely absurd.
Right.
But, and the Batman of the Justice League has that going on where he has no business being in a big fight where there's, you know, Green Lantern, Superman, etc., doing things, right? But anyway, so that's my comics Batman is Justice League, and then a couple of the famous graphic novels like Year One.
Oh sure,
Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, seminal. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of those things, but not really the like monthly stuff very much on the Batman side.
Did you read The Long Halloween? Because that's a lot of this movie is based on that.
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Fantastic series. Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale are the creators on that. It is really, really good. There's a follow-up to it.
The Interminable Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. The slightly less lengthy Christmas.
The excruciating Hanukkah. Yeah. The excruciating
Hanukkah. I think it's Haunted Night or Dark Victory or something like that.
A different borough of Gotham.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
For that one, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. No, but so for me personally, Batman has kind of always been present in my life. When I came,
it should be a little Batman silhouette, like right behind you, like,
you know, like, see, I, like, I just Richard. Put a Batman like mask on Jen's picture back there. I'll do. No, but Batman, the character, you know, when I was a kid, I watched the League of Super Friends. And, you know, I read Batman comics every once in a while. When we came back from England, my dad was stationed in England for 4 years. When we came back and I started to really get into comic books, like from a collecting standpoint, I picked up The Dark Knight Returns. And it was, this is 1986. This is mind bending compared to what you normally see. I mean, you can't, I mean, to say there's just, it's difficult to emphasize how different it was from the regular DC stuff at the time. I mean, it really turned everything kind of on its head. And that really threw me into a Batman like rabbit hole for a while. And that lasted a couple of years. And then I moved on. X-Men and Hulk and Spider-Man back to Marvel. But then when the Batman 1989 movie came out, holy crap.
Oh, buddy.
At the time, we thought it was dark and gritty and awesome. But looking back on it, it is cheesy as hell.
Yeah. For some reason, I fired up that movie a few months ago. Just, I was like, I just wonder how this holds up. Richard, let me state for my own personal whatever, it does not hold up. I stopped it after like 20 minutes. I was like, what is this? Oh my God.
We thought it was so anti-camp at the time, but now looking back on it, it is total camp. And it's not without its merits, but
like it recampifies camp.
Yeah.
Right. It sets a different, it's like camp for people who thought they weren't camp, but they're right in the camp still.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Tim Burton, so
yeah,
you can't get, I mean, that's just, like Tim Burton, man, we thought Tim Burton was the answer, but I've seen every Batman theatrical film, and I would say I'm a Batman fan, as a character. Now I don't read his monthly comics. I read Nightwing, which is a Batman family comic, but I read some Batman miniseries here and there, basically. So going into this, I've got some pretty good lore. Well, and the other thing is we played that Arkham Asylum game. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
I've played Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and some of Arkham Knight.
Nice. Okay.
Not all of it.
Okay. I've played all three of them all the way through.
Okay.
But
okay.
You and I played Asylum and City. I'm pretty sure we played them like together, like sitting on the couch, like we'd play couch, for 20 minutes and like pass the controller.
Just pass
I remember. Yeah. So I remember that because that was the bit where like you could like sneak up behind somebody and take them down, like silently take them down with the neck thing. And it was always, shh, just let it happen. Just let it happen. You know? I've got a lot of Batman history for me.
Yeah.
So, but oddly enough, I didn't feel like there was a lot riding on this when I went into this film. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which is weird. I guess because how did you feel about Justice League and Batman versus Superman and the Ben Affleck, the Batfleck era? How did you feel about that?
So I respect as performers all the people who were in those things.
Okay.
Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, et cetera, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Irons, the list goes on, right?
Sure.
I thought the theatrical release of Batman v Superman was kind of less than great. I thought Justice League, the theatrical release was, I thought it was fucking terrible. I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Yeah.
And I don't like, I didn't, I'm not a fanboy of anything. Like, I'm not going into a movie thinking like, I hope this does good because I want my special character to win like box office returns things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just want to see a good movie. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely.
Listen to me sounding all up my own asshole about that stuff. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going in with like DC is my thing, so Batman is like always my guy. Like, no,
sure.
And so the Justice League, and I haven't seen the like the HBO like redo of Zack Snyder stuff, but the Justice League that appeared in theaters was fucking garbage.
Yeah, it was trash.
And so that was how I felt about that interlude in Batman verse.
Right. Yeah. Because it does feel like that, right? It feels like it was like this little sidetrack and now we're back.
And this one felt very much like, and I haven't seen it, but it felt like it's now part of the Joaquin Phoenix Joker thing. In other words, it may not be part of that universe,
right?
But it's part of that style of like, let's just go totally auteur on this, right? And just just do different things and not try to be fucking whatever that Justice League shit was.
Right.
This is a different thing now.
Yeah. I do like what DC's doing now. They are doing very much that. They're going with whatever the hell works. They're going to throw it at the wall. And if it sticks, they're going to go with it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the hell out of that Joker, that Joker movie. A lot of people said it was like watered down Scorsese, but I mean, for a Joker movie to be watered down Scorsese, that's not so bad. Really?
Watered down Scorsese is still better than like, any director out there, basically, right?
Better than Justice League, that's for
except for sure. Except for Marty himself.
Yeah, except for Marty himself, right? So yeah, but I see, my expectations were low going into this because of the Justice League thing.
Honestly, it turns out kind of smart when you think about it, because like you see a preview or whatever, and you're like, oh, this is not part of that.
Right.
This is not anchored to any like, it's not anchored to any other series as a continuation of a thing or whatever.
Right.
One glance at one trailer tells you this is a thing by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're shedding all kinds of baggage before you even sit down and watch it. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's pretty smart marketing wise, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. I'd have to agree with that. I mean, kind of brilliant really to just say, look, we're going to shrug off. We're going to shuffle that off and we're going to just do, we're going to do our own thing. You guys are going to watch it because it's Batman.
I mean, I think it's just sort of emblematic of the Spider-Man thing, really, where like you fucking nerds are going to pay for it anyway. So like, we're not going to try to like balance this perfectly on the whatever.
Right.
Like if the very next Batman movie is not at all connected to this one.
Right.
It's not going to matter.
Nobody's going to care. Right?
Nobody's going to care.
They're going to go.
And I think that's got this interesting mix of like, that's great for actors who might want to be Batman.
Right.
Or Spider-Man or whatever. Right. Cause now there's more opportunity.
Sure.
It's probably, I don't know. Terrible is not the right word. It's probably it's discombobulating for anything like a unified character.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think at this point, any character in comic books is any character that anybody recognizes in comic books is not a unified character anymore.
Mm-mm.
Right. Cause like the Scott Summers that was Cyclops in the 60s when X-Men debuted.
Yeah.
Like the comics that are written now would have you believe that is Scott Summers, but it's not, it's just not, right. And like, in no way is that, like, too many things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Too many, this 50 years hence have occurred. Mm-hmm. Right. And like the dialogue and the style and the whatever that happened then is one thing. Even if Scott Summers is like this crazy, like hardline, whatever guy that he became for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I get that you're saying it's the same character. It's just not.
Sure.
You know, Professor X, Magneto, whatever, all that stuff. Like, I get that they're supposed to be the same character, but they're not.
They change them in service to the story.
Yeah.
As long as the story is served, then the characters flourish, really. I mean,
yeah. I'm not saying that they're not the same character, because they are the same character, except in every twist and turn throughout the history of a character through 50 years of comic book, whatever, in Marvel, DC, whatever, like, it's like when you start in one place and you get to the end of where it is now, let's say, right? If you were to go read every appearance that Scott Summers makes in every comic book from 60 whatever till now,
good luck.
The now would be unrecognizable,
right,
from the 60s guy, even right. though, like, yeah. what, 10 years have gone by in his subjective experience or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, clearly that's not the case, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, that's just the way things are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so the same is true of any character who people love, is that it will keep being reinvented for generations or half generations or whatever, just until time immemorial.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
As long as money can be made, the character will serve an interest of some kind or another and evolve to meet the time it's in. Mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely. That's something that this version of Batman does very well, actually.
Yeah.
We'll get into that, but not to get too far off topic, but your comments about Scott Summers now versus Scott Summers 1962 being unrecognizable to one another is actually ended up being a storyline in X-Men comics. Did you read the Brian Michael Bendis Amazing X-Men and All New X-Men?
The series? One where they time traveled.
They time traveled. The
young ones.
Yeah. They brought back the original five into the present, and they made a whole big thing out of it. It wasn't exactly the best, but it was a plot point.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into this. This is, okay, so directed by Matt Reeves. Matt Reeves, the guy that brought us, what was the, what's the name of that, the monster movie? Cloverfield. He brought us Cloverfield.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he also did, I want to see, he did Planet of the Apes, the Planet of the Apes remake. Mm. And he did a remake of Let Me In. This guy's just does remakes, actually, now that I think about it. Because this guy's
fucking problem.
What is this guy's problem? He's a British director, and he.
Oh well,
fucking excuse me, right? So, but he hired. We've got Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne / Batman, or actually, just really mostly just Batman, right?
Right. Even as Bruce Wayne, he's still just Batman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which is fantastic.
Can,
and really,
we should let's get into that later.
Yeah, I've got notes on that. Yeah. We've got Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman / Selina Kyle, although they never really call her Catwoman.
Super fucking good. Yeah,
I know, right? Paul Dano as the Riddler, speaking of super fucking good.
Super fucking good.
Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon. Again, super fucking good. Super
fucking good.
John Turturro as again, super good. Super
fucking good.
And Colin Farrell, an unrecognizable Colin Farrell as the Penguin, completely blew my mind in this movie.
Yeah. Blew my mind. Like, the thing that blows my mind the most about that is that, like, did you need Colin Farrell to do that guy?
I don't know.
There's plenty of like big fat white guys looking for parts. You know what I mean? Like,
hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah.
I got the phone, guys.
Yeah. But like, I'm right here.
But I mean, like between makeup and body transformation, whatever, like, you're like, why did it need to be? I mean, it's a fucking amazing performance, but why did it need to be Colin Farrell?
I don't know.
I was like,
then again, why did the Penguin in 1992 need to be Danny DeVito?
I mean, short blobby guy, right?
I suppose,
you can,
yeah.
You can at least get there.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's not good. It's good that he was cast. No, they used makeup to transform him into a guy. That guy probably already exists just as that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I don't know, and I don't know why they chose Colin Farrell. Maybe because of the strength of his performances in other things. I mean, he is a pretty good actor.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, he just blows it away in this movie.
Kills it.
Absolutely kills it. Yeah.
Crushes it.
Absolutely. So we're dealing with a Batman who is 2 years into his career as the world's greatest detective. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I wanted to touch on because we've never really seen Detective Batman on film. It's always been punch people in the face Batman.
It's hardly ever been the focus, right?
Right.
Like in the, let's see, in the film where, in the Val Kilmer Batman, you see him do a couple riddles, right?
Right. Yeah.
In the Batman
very pedestrian Superman riddles.
Yeah. In the Batman v Superman one, he like figures out where they are based on some the mud on some issue or whatever. I'm not sure.
Right.
Right. There's a difference between those things and having the whole film be a detective movie.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
This movie plays like a horror movie or a police procedural. It felt like Silence of the Lambs. I had these real Silence of the Lambs vibes in this film. Maybe it was all the red lighting in like darkened places. I don't know, but it just it played a lot like the Silence of the Lambs. And honestly, I was there for it. I was there.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This was great because there were so many things that were great about this in that detective sense. Right?
Yeah.
So there's the one of my favorite things about like this is a really good touch by the writing and the acting.
Okay.
Is that so when Batman is like just wandering around on a crime scene with a bunch of cops.
Yeah.
And the cops are like, hey buddy, don't fucking touch that. He just like looks at them and then just keeps going. Right.
Right.
No, I think I will.
I'm gonna keep doing this.
I'm gonna touch this more. What are you gonna do?
He's looking at them, he's touching it, he's like, watch.
You
me touch it? Look at that. What are you gonna do?
Just touched it.
Nothing? You aren't gonna do anything, are you?
You're not supposed to touch that, buddy.
That happened touch a lot too. That was like 3-4
and,
times.
And like he didn't say anything. He just would like look at them.
Yeah.
And then go back to touching the thing, right? Super, super good.
Right. So, okay. So if we follow the plot here, basically we have the mayor of Gotham getting killed at the beginning of the movie by the Riddler.
The mayor.
The mayor gets murdered. And that's what brings in Batman. He does this big investigation. They discover that there's a message that was left for Batman, and the commissioner gets on James Gordon's case because Gordon's not the commissioner at that point. He's a lieutenant, maybe
detective.
So he gets on his case because he's bringing Batman into like, why are you bringing your superhero buddy to our crime scene, you know? but he eventually gets like wiped out by the Riddler as well. So he's not much of an antagonist for very long.
No. Right? I was surprised by how fast that guy was like, hey, get him the fuck off of my crime scene. And then he's dead.
Yeah.
That guy is dead soon after that.
Yeah. Exactly. So Batman and Gordon go on this like odyssey of like solving the Riddler's stuff for about two-thirds of the movie.
Yeah,
they are busy,
like a buddy cop thing almost between Gordon and Batman.
It really is. Yeah. And we, you know, we get introduced to the Penguin, we get introduced to Selina Kyle, we get introduced to Selina Kyle's roommate, who is going to play a big part in the discovery of the Riddler, basically.
Yeah.
And we get stuff. We get these really interesting set pieces, like the Riddler is trying to expose the truth about Gotham. He claims to have some information that will blow Gotham out of the water. It'll ruin everything that everybody thinks is great about Gotham, which this Gotham, I don't know if anybody thinks there's a whole that much that's great about Gotham.
I thought to myself, okay. All the murdering and the crime and whatever, like, is there anybody walking around like, this is my town?
Yeah.
God, I love this place.
I love Gotham. Nobody has an I Heart Gotham t-shirt on, right?
Nobody's like, oh, I only hope I never learn anything bad about Gotham, right?
Boy, I hope there's no life-altering secrets out there about Gotham that I would
heaven forfend that there be organized crime in this, my city of Gotham, right?
Yeah. This dark and seedy underbelly of a city. The entire city is underbelly.
In this place that has 10 minutes of sunrise and then goes back to darkness.
Right? This is like 30 days of night. Like, where are they? Alaska? It is constantly dark there. So, but we get, because it's constantly dark, we get this great cinematography. There are scenes in this movie that I often think to myself, if the way that I look at a film is as an art piece in certain ways, right? And one of the things we talked about this with The Last Jedi over on Great Disturbances, every shot in that film, you could stop it at any given time and you could frame that and put it up on your wall and it would be a piece of art. That's what this film feels like. And I went and I did a little digging. Turns out the cinematographer on this movie is the cinematographer on Dune. Yeah, Dune and Rogue One.
That's a pretty great resume right there. Holy shit.
Two movies by themselves they're gorgeous films. Yes. Absolutely gorgeous.
Oh my God.
Lesser known, Zero Dark 30. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
Another movie that takes place in very dark confines. Most of the movie is in the dark, and he does some amazing stuff with the camera in the dark in that film. It's really, really good stuff.
Okay.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, I also was going to say, what time is that?
What time?
What time is Zero Dark 30?
Oh, like, it's 30 minutes after midnight. Do I set my alarm?
That's okay. Okay.
It's 30 minutes after midnight.
Very good. Yep. Very good.
Or 6:30 in the morning. Oh, dark gotcha. 30 just means it's like 30 minutes after it's really friggin' dark out. It's early. Early in the morning.
Early in the morning. Okay.
Zero dark 30. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. No, yeah, absolutely. So basically we get a whole bunch of like Riddler antics. Not antics in the way that you think of like Jim Carrey's Riddler either. This dude he's a straight up serial killer and they label him as such.
Yeah, he's like, he's not fucking around.
Not at all. He straps a bomb around some dude's throat, like a Total Recall bomb around his throat.
And makes him answer. Blows him up.
Right.
The guy does not escape.
He is not fucking around.
He's dead.
Yeah. He's trying to get him to out this rat. The person that was, what do you call it? Like responsible for giving up information.
Giving up information
to Gotham. When they had this big bust of, was it Falcone?
No, Salvatore Moroni.
Salvatore Moroni, that's right. Sal Moroni there was this big bust, and there was a rat that basically led them to that big bust.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we find out that the Wayne family is tied into all this insanity in a way that I don't know that I like what they did with it, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like,
I'm definitely okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like the world's greatest twists, but
right,
because they flinch on it, right? Like the secret is that Thomas Wayne hired Falcone to handle these people that are this journalist that was going to out Thomas Wayne's wife mental health issues. And Falcone had him killed.
Yeah.
Now the way that they flinch on that is that later they're going to tell us that Thomas Wayne never said kill him. He just said, hey, help me out with him. But you'd think that someone like Thomas Wayne would be smart enough to know that if you go to the mob and say, take care of him.
You're make sure he doesn't asking for squeal.
Right. Yeah. I don't want him to,
but do it very nicely.
Yeah. Just like me, you know, maybe talk mean to him or something. Just don't kill him, you know,
threaten to sign him up for like that CD club thing, you know, like really, really put the screws to him. All right. Really put the screws to him.
I imagine Alfred's version of Thomas Wayne is not quite the version of Thomas Wayne that really exists, because it is Alfred that tells Bruce, because Bruce kind of loses a little bit of faith in his father when he finds out that his dad had done this. Mm-hmm. And but Alfred assures him, no, your dad didn't tell him to kill him. Your dad just said, help me with him. To a mobster, you know, he wasn't saying kill him. He never said the word kill.
when I watched that scene, I was like, I'm glad that they're talking about how, you know, a good man can still make mistakes, because
yes, absolutely,
that's just plain stupid to be like, hey mobster, help me, but don't kill him. Don't you kill him, mobster.
Well, and it informs Batman's story as well, because Batman starts out as vengeance and he ends up as hope.
Yeah.
By the end of this.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, it informs the whole overarching story of the character, but it is nonsensical to have a person that is, I would assume, a smart person. He's supposed to be a brain surgeon, right? Like, that's what Thomas Wayne did. But he was running for mayor. He didn't want this to get out. And he's like, take care of him. And he's like, oh, take care of him? He's like, yeah, take care of him, please. Thank you. And of course, makes perfect sense. So after we get this big revelation, we start dealing more with Selina Kyle and her stuff. And the Riddler just drops off the face of the earth.
For a good portion of it, the Riddler is like, not a thing there. And I mean, they kind of set it up so that the Riddler says, hey, bring the rat to the light.
Right.
And that's kind of when I'm going to come back into the picture.
Right.
And it makes sense, because that is what happens, right? They spend a lot of time going, okay, we got to do something about this stuff, and let's get Falcone, and let's not, should we kill him? Should we not kill him? All this kind of stuff. Then once they bring him under the light is when, you know, he ices him, you know, and he's done for.
Right.
There was a moment in the scene where sometime before that, they get the Penguin. Right. Mm-hmm. Gordon and Batman get the Penguin.
Right.
And they've got him tied up against the wall, and they're like, you're the rat. You got wings, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, you dummies, that's bad Spanish. And they figure out it's. And then they're like, is it Falcone? And Batman says, a falcon has wings. And you're like.
That was, I almost checked out. I really almost checked out at that point. I was like, is that Detective Batman? Like, that's
that. At that moment, I was like, man, you can, like, we don't need to say that in that way.
Yeah.
No one is being caught, whatever. Right. Yeah. Like, in fact, until they finger Hayo, the Penguin, as the rat, the first time they say, rat with wings, my first thought was Falcone, because the name of this is the Falcon, and he's like very connected to this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they assume it's the Penguin, and I'm like, well, okay, I guess maybe it's the Penguin. Sure. But then they come back around to Falcone, and Batman says, as though not everyone's been thinking, Falcone is like, a falcon has wings.
Yeah,
no shit, a falcon has wings.
Everything's like, got wings, like, in this movie.
That little line, I think needed a little bit of fine tuning to not make it be like, yeah, fucking duh, dude.
maybe not. Okay.
Tony Hawk, a hawk has wings. Oh my God, Jim, pigeons have wings too. It could be anybody.
It's a stool pigeon. They do use that, though.
Even creatures that can't fly, like some large species of beetles, have wings too.
We gotta think, Batman. We gotta think. What has wings? Sanitary napkins.
Oh my God! If I drink Red Bull, I have wings.
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
Cupid has wings.
Follow Red Bull shipments for the last 10 years through Gotham.
Alfred, I need you to track all the Red Bull shipments. So
we've gone off course, yeah.
We're a little off course, yeah. But, well, I mean, It's not like we're in familiar territory here because we're off course. So, but I think that this is one of those things where I would say show us, don't tell us.
Yeah.
Don't have Batman. This is the scene in Batman or in the Dark Knight Rises when Batman and Catwoman are on the roof and he's talking and he's got his back to her and he turns around and she's gone. And he says in the Batman voice, "So that's what that feels like." Like, we know, dude, we know, we get the joke. Yeah, yeah. We already get the joke, right?
Like it would have been perfect to have him go like that. So, whatever, so you know. whatever the lead up to them saying a falcon has wings.
Yeah.
Just cut right there and make the next line of the movie be Falcone saying something.
Yeah.
And everyone will get it. Everyone will get it then. Perfect. Right.
Perfect. Yeah. That would have been perfect. But I feel like some of the editing in this definitely is.
It's such a minor quibble compared to the quality of the thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I feel like I'm nitpicking here, but it's really one of maybe three things that I have a problem with in this movie, and they're not even that big of a thing.
Rich, hit me with them right now.
Okay, please. So I already talked about the one, which was the Thomas Wayne thing, and not realizing that saying to a known mob boss, hey, take care of this guy for me, would result in that guy getting taken care of, you know, with a weapon or tying to a chair, whatever, pulling out his toenails. I don't know.
Right.
The other bit for me was the Alfred getting Chewbacca'd. Like they Chewbacca'd Alfred. He gets the bomb. He turns over the package. He sees it's a bomb. He throws it. It blows up. They cut to, the next scene, and you're like, holy crap, they killed Alfred. But no, he's just in a hospital. He's fine. He's in
the hospital.
He's all right. Like, he'll be fine.
And he wakes up like the next day.
Yeah, literally the next day. It's Chewbacca. They Chewbacca'd him. Yeah. So that was. Those are my three big things. But this is, it's all overshadowed by the themes of this movie overall. This movie's about class warfare, and it's about to a degree about mental health and about becoming more than what you expect of yourself. There's themes in this movie. It's thematically important, I think.
Let's come back to, because we started this back in the cast intros.
Yeah.
Let's come back to the Batman Bruce Wayne dichotomy here.
Yes.
Which I just, as I was watching this, I was like, first of all, it's a while until you really actually see Bruce Wayne in a mode other than like just after he's removed the helmet. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause he does the first couple of things he does, and then he takes his helmet off and dusts himself. But he's, you can kind of forgive him for being in Batman mode at that point.
Yeah.
But then he does the like funeral thing. He does a couple other things, and you're like, is there anybody home except Batman here?
Well, he's got like a group of servants. Do they all know that he's Batman?
Well, but I mean like in the persona.
Oh, you mean in his
head. Mind.
I gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
In his mind, because he's empty. Bruce Wayne is empty.
Bruce Wayne is the mask. That's
Bruce Wayne is. Yeah.
Bruce Wayne is the alter ego. Batman is who he is. And that's what I love about this movie, is that they finally get that right. This isn't about Bruce Wayne masquerading as a vigilante. This is about a vigilante masquerading as a billionaire playboy. And even at that, he's not very much of a billionaire playboy.
He could give a shit about the playboy thing of it.
Right.
And he could kind of give a shit about the billionaire thing of it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in this film, I don't like, he's not running Wayne Enterprises, is he?
I don't think so. Well, if he is, they're not alluding to it at all.
If he is, he doesn't show up for work very much.
Yeah.
Right, because other films and other media would have you believe that in the daytime he's like CEO and like wheeling and dealing, and then at night he puts on the thing and goes and like does detective shit. But like in this movie, he's like inherited billions of dollars. And everyone's like, so I guess Bruce Wayne's a thing, huh? Sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, he's not doing Wayne Enterprises stuff. Mm-mm. If that's even a I don't even know if Wayne Enterprises is necessarily a thing in this movie.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just that his family is rich some other way. But he's like, he's just he's completely emptied of anything for almost the entire movie. And then, like, Catwoman, or so I guess there's no such thing as Catwoman in this movie, but right. Selina Kyle is kind of the thing that starts to sort of fill a little bit of his jug, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Right? With some smooching.
Yeah.
So Bruce Wayne is like, oh, that's right. I have a wiener. And I am feeling things down in my bat pants right now. But also in terms of like...
It feels like when I used to slide down that pole to get to the bat cave.
You get the feeling that when Batman asks her to stay, it's really kind of Bruce Wayne asking her to stay.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, almost like she's the only one so far that has gotten to see who Bruce Wayne really is. Like, gotten to see the Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, and which I think fits the theme too, is that like she doesn't know he's Bruce Wayne,
right?
But she sees Bruce Wayne, right?
Yeah.
In other words, Bruce Wayne has so disappeared into the Batman mm-hmm. that by opening his bat heart a little bit, Selina Kyle, even though she never sees him with a mask off,
yeah,
she sees more of Bruce Wayne than anybody else because Bruce Wayne is the Batman.
And he's not wearing pants half the time.
He's not even wearing pants half the time, man.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree with that. That he is masked but unmasked to her.
Yeah.
Like the mask of Batman is slipping when it comes to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something about her that really draws that out of him.
I mean, they bear some similarity to each other in terms of like, you know, in their own way. In their own understanding, is protecting innocent people from whatever.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she definitely calls out Bruce Wayne, the public persona of Bruce Wayne, as like billionaire orphan kid who's like, he's an orphan, but come on, that's different than how I'm an orphan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, which is totally true. Right. I mean, of course it is. And so if you're Batman at that point, you're like, yeah, boy, that's right. You're totally right, Selina. Bruce Wayne is different than me and you, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick, isn't he?
Smooch me some more. Yeah. Selina. This movie is about Batman coming to hate Bruce Wayne. It's like a Hulk thing now, right?
Oh yeah, like, definitely. We lose Selina for a little bit. We lose the Riddler for a little bit at different intervals, right? So when we're focused on Selina, Riddler's gone. When we're focused on the Riddler, Selina's gone for the most part. But I think that it all comes together really well in a pretty well executed third act, don't you think? So because basically we find out after Riddler gets exposed, he's an accountant, by the way, which is I would have loved to have been able to talk to Jen about this because he's an accountant that just fucking snapped and he's had enough. It's like, that's just one tax return too fucking much. And that's it. One more Excel book, I swear to God. And he loses his mind. He's a former orphan, or he's still an orphan. I guess you don't ever become a former orphan. It's like being an alcoholic, right?
That's pretty permanent.
Yeah. You're an orphan. You don't have a kid. I mean, unless zombies are a thing, you know.
There's no unorphaning an orphan.
No offense at all to people who are orphans, but that is very true.
I'm sorry to say it. So, I mean, an orphan would understand that,
right.
Yeah, that's how definitions of words work. Right.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they figure out that he's a forensic accountant, and he had stumbled on this information. And it kind of drove him a little nuts, and he decided he was going to expose it to the world, but he was going to kill a bunch of people in the meantime. So they lock him up in Arkham. And that's not the end of it, though, because he's got a final plan. And the final plan has to do with an army of incel Riddlers, basically, is what he's assembled online. Yeah. He's basically using like Gotham Reddit, like r/ Gotham, right?
Yeah.
to assemble an army of incel Riddlers and plant bombs at the levees that surround the city of Gotham, the lower portion of Gotham.
Yeah.
And they go off, they flood the city, and these Riddler incels decide they're going to, or not decide, their part in this is that they're going to just start picking off people wealthy people, yeah. politicians, yep. everybody. And these incel guys are firing from the rafters and Batman has to take them down. And you yeah. get this great scene where he's going after this mayoral candidate to help her to get, you know, rescue her. And you get this great scene of him with a flare leading these people out of the dark
water in the darkness, out of yeah. the
water in the darkness, and yeah. the light. And it's just, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
But you know, they end up saving everybody. At one point, one of the incels tells him that he's vengeance. And I think that that stung him a little bit, because we learn, and I think it's the voiceover that tells us this, right? Where he says, you know, I've got to learn to become more than that, yeah. or something like that.
Yeah.
yeah. He's not just vengeance. I feel like the Riddlers were vengeance, and Batman has to evolve and become more than just vengeance. And he does yeah. in that yeah. time of crisis. He becomes, you know, a hero, really, more than just a vigilante, more than just somebody out there to,
yeah.
to, you know, beat up bad guys.
Although this movie is like the next film, if they do anything resembling a series with this, yeah. which given the box office, I'm sure they will.
Oh God, yeah, they're
right. There is money coming down the pike, right? There will, if they don't do, or let's no, I shouldn't put it that way. You know how the beginning of the Chris Nolan Dark Knight film mm-hmm. has people being copycats of Batman?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, come on. There's gonna be copycats of this Batman too.
You know yeah, mean?
Because he's so. because at the end of this film, he's just standing there among the public in daylight, just like sandbagging things and handing out sandwiches, basically, right?
And like, rescuing people. Yeah, he's like yeah. putting people in helicopters.
He's
yeah.
like, okay, you're secured now. Thumbs up, buddy. Take him up. You know.
Yeah, like, yeah. He's like, he's go.
Like Batman the EMT at that point.
yeah,
and
Bat
like
EMT,
Bat EMT, and he's and like people are gonna see that and hear about that and be like, I can do that too. I'm going to do that. And there's going to be thousands of copycat bat guys.
Yeah.
Out there, you know? Yeah.
It's interesting.
Which it, you got to think about, like if this Batman represents hope, what is the shape of that? What does that mean?
Basically the way I took it was it's not hard to be the beacon of hope in Gotham. You know, I mean, Gotham is basically an entire city that is a slum, and the worst parts of Gotham, like the Narrows and that sort of thing, are even worse than what you would think the rest of the place would be. So it's not hard to be a beacon of light in that. I think that what that looks like is him doing more of what he was doing at the end of this, which, okay, so I'm gonna get there in a roundabout way. I was watching
take us through the trip, man.
Okay, I was watching the original RoboCop a couple of days ago, and it occurred to me that is how they had portrayed Batman, as this cold, unfeeling person, this robotic person, for the longest time. There's a scene in RoboCop where he saves a woman from being raped, and the woman runs up to him and says, "Oh my God, thank you. Thank you so much." And he looks at her and he goes, "Ma'am, you've suffered a trauma. I can get you in contact with the rape counselors." And that's it. There's no, "You're going to be okay.
No,
it's going to yeah. be all right." None of that.
Okay. Yeah.
That is how Batman has always been kind of portrayed, right? In that, he is tough as nails. He is all business. But this Batman has an opportunity to transcend that, where he can be as tough as nails when he needs to be, but he can also, I don't know, kiss a baby if he has to, you know, for like shake hands and kiss a baby, you know, like we finally see Batman at the end of this movie in light. Every other moment in this movie, he is in the dark. He's in the shadows. There's never much light on him. But when he is doing those good deeds, he's fully in the light, like you said. So I think that Batman looks a lot like an EMT or a rescue worker, you know? What do you think that looks like?
If I project this film onto real life, not into, like, you know, the universe of this film, mm-hmm. I would think that the end of this film would more or less be the end of the Batman.
Hmm.
Because I don't see how in real life a law and order society tolerates vigilantism like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's so great. It's so great that a billionaire blows his money to find serial killers. It really is. It really is. Except that, like, to have law, order, due process, and people doing the things that they're doing as carved out by, right? Because there's laws that protect cops and other law enforcement to go and do the things that they do to capture people, mm-hmm. that vigilantes are not protected under and are not served under.
Yeah.
Right. Like Batman represents a hope of some kind in that, like, we can stand up to that stuff, but ultimately you need to there to not be a Batman. And you need that to happen pretty soon. Right. Because you can't have too many, because only if Batman is even to work, Batman has to be a person so skilled and wealthy and resource equipped, mm-hmm. that only one person could be him. And if that's true, that's kind of got like a form of oligarchy stamped all over it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
he's definitely rich and can do things that only rich people can do.
He can afford to. It's the equivalent of shooting yourself up into space just to be able to say that you were in space. Yeah. Right.
So it's got, there's like a scale here going on.
Right.
Like until Batman is exposed in the light and everyone kind of is like, oh yeah, hey Batman, how you doing? Like, how's the kids, Batman? Right. Like that. Yeah. You get at the end of the movie, you get the sense that that's where they're going.
Right.
Right. Is that Batman's going to be like a part of the city. And he's like, he's going to throw out the first pitch at the Gotham Knights baseball games and stuff like that, right?
Kind of like Spider-Man is in his universe.
Yeah.
Where like people are like, hey, Spidey. You know?
But like, I think that only works in comics.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because they talk about that.
Like it's like hope. The hope part of it. It's weird because I think there's the flip of all of the things I just said is that I think there are absolutely times and places where laws as written and societal roles as written don't match what needs to happen.
Right. Sure.
But those things should be as few and far between as possible. And when they happen, we should evaluate them and find ways for them not to happen again.
Right.
Right. So yeah. In other words, I mean, there are flaws in how the American presidency works.
Yeah.
And one of my greatest wishes for that is for presidents and other politicians to address the flaws in the role of president itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But those flaws only became known in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
Or understood. Yep. Right. But once you expose them, you should work so the system corrects them.
Ideally.
You shouldn't have hope that like someone will just be good enough not to exploit those things. Right.
Yeah.
And so Batman has that sort of weird balance of like, I'm glad he's there, but we should really make it so he shouldn't be here.
Right.
He is here. I'm glad he saved us. He shouldn't be here.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Which like the older I get, the weirder I kind of understand things like people being opposed to Batman in some way, because Batman's like inside comics, Batman is great.
Right.
If Batman showed up in Minneapolis and was like beating up people for whatever, I'd be like, that guy shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, yeah. am I out of my mind here?
No, like, you're not.
I'm not saying that you're being antagonistic to me. I'm just saying that you have to sort of have a facade here.
But I don't think you're far off though with this, with your analysis there, because you have to, in order for Batman to work, the audience has to give that conceit that it's okay that there is a person out there beating the shit out of people without due process or any of those other things that we've come to accept as a society. We have to accept that the conceit is this world that Batman inhabits is bad enough that we have to forego in certain circumstances due process and all those other things
that go along with it. Yeah, exactly.
I think that in a real world sense, Batman is not applicable. Batman is only applicable in a sense where you as an audience member, you as a viewer or a consumer of the product or the vessel through which you are observing Batman, it's only applicable in that vessel.
You know, the thing is here is like what brings me around to tie it all together then in this stuff is that like a film like The Batman, which is saying that it got so bad that there needed to be a billionaire to do these things because there was nothing else to have happen.
Yeah.
Like that particular thing, that very specific scenario, I'm like, okay, yeah, but in real life, I don't know. But I think there is a sense, and now I'm wrapping this back around to maybe kind of understanding it, is that the earlier point we made about how there is like, there are systems and laws and whatever, and then there are times where when you have to act without the support of those things because they are imperfect and you are presented with a situation that is imperfect, right?
Yeah.
Is that Batman represents, okay, everyone, on a small scale, you should do this too. Like you should do the right thing at whatever cost to yourself if it's the right thing. So like there was an episode of The West Wing where, like, I don't even know if it's true or not, but there was the guy who set, so John Wilkes Booth, when he shot Lincoln, somehow his leg got broken.
Right.
And there was a doctor who set his leg.
Yeah.
And in the episode of West Wing, they say that guy was tried for treason or charged with treason or whatever. I'm not sure if, I don't even know if that's true or not.
Hmm.
But the doctor, Abby Bartlett, in that episode says, but you're a doctor, you set the leg. Right. The doctor made the choice of my Hippocratic oath, relieving this pain, relieving the suffering is more important than whatever piece of the law will brand me a traitor for doing it. And in sort of in reverse, it is super conceivable that on a small scale, you or I will be presented with a situation where the right thing to do is not the legal thing to do.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's where Batman applies.
Right.
That's where the Batmanness of us, where we release our inner Batman, so to speak, and say, like, the system didn't do good enough here. I'm going to do something that's not within the system.
Right.
And that's the right thing.
Right.
Because in universe, I think Batman did do the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. For the conceit of the story, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so in our universe, there are occasionally like smaller scale, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously not like city sweeping vigilante scale, but like, you know, very small situational scales where just doing the rules because they're the rules is not good enough for the most morally upright outcome of the thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're getting kind of to the end of this, but I wanted to get your thoughts on Robert Pattinson. How do you feel he did as Batman?
He crushed it, dude.
Nice.
I think he crushed it. I think the script clearly asked of him to be Batman forward and Bruce Wayne hollow shell. And that was like, I was like, first of all, as Batman, he's so great. I thought he was so great with Batman, the Batman wearing the mask stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then I also thought his Bruce Wayne was like way more tortured and fucked up than any other Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
In film, right?
Right.
Like the other Bruce Waynes all had the Playboy thing, and this Bruce Wayne has not figured out the Playboy thing yet. You know, whether he will or not, I don't know, but he hasn't yet. Right. So, and I think he did a fantastic job. I was a big fan of Robert Pattinson as Batman in this one.
I got to agree with you. I, you know, after Heath Ledger got cast as the Joker in The Dark Knight, I was one of those people that was like, the guy from The Knight's Tale, screw this. I'm not going to watch this crap. And then I basically, they made, you know, I ate crow. And yeah. I do my best to reserve judgment until I've seen it. And having seen it, he, like you said, he crushes it. He knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
The dude did, he put everything into this role. It was fantastic.
Yeah, he really did.
Yeah.
Like when he was, there was two scenes
where
he beats on somebody like more than maybe is required.
Yeah.
And you're like, and you're like, whoa, holy shit.
Yeah.
That guy really is beating that guy down. Right. That was like, like you, he put some rage into that stuff. And that was, I was like, that's pretty good, buddy.
He really did. Yeah. There. And I like the choice there too, in that, you know, Batman, the character of Batman, the character of Bruce Wayne, has some unresolved stuff. That's why he's doing this. Yeah. And that'll manifest, especially as a young first couple of years person doing this.
Yeah.
He's going to crack. That was brilliant. That was really, really smart.
Yeah.
How about Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle?
So good. Oh, yeah. So good.
Yes.
Like she, like, man, she like, I totally believed that she could kick my ass, but at the same time was like somebody who was facing certain vulnerabilities of her own in her life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Like amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. She has a, she plays the moral ambiguity of the role really, really, really well in this, in that she's doing the right thing. This goes back to exactly what you were talking about. Doing the right thing may not be the right thing according to the letter of the law. And that's that thin line that Catwoman has always really tread. And I think Zoe Kravitz really nails it. Yeah. I had no idea where I had seen her before. But it turns out she was in X-Men First Class. She was Angel in X-Men First Class.
Oh!
And I, like, mind blown, because I didn't recognize her. I did not recognize her at all. But yeah, I did a little Googling, because I knew the name. Isn't she like Lenny Kravitz's kid?
Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet, yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense then. That makes sense why I know the name. How about Paul Dano?
So good. Oh my God. So good.
Like,
so good.
What shoes to have to fill, right? Because he's not trying to fill Jim Carrey's shoes. He's trying to live up to the Heath Ledger Joker at this point, right? Not even the frickin', he's not even trying to be Harvey Dent. He's not trying to be Bane or anything like that.
No.
He's trying to eclipse. I think that Matt Reeves even called Christopher Nolan and said, I'm going to try and out Dark Knight you with this movie, if I'm remembering that correctly. But for him, did you ever see There Will Be Blood? He was in that movie.
No,
he was fantastic in that flick. He was in a movie called Prisoners. He was really good in that. He was in 12 Years a Slave. Obviously, have you seen that movie?
No,
that's a movie. That's one of those watch one time movies. It's phenomenal, but it's painful and it's hard to watch, but he's really good in that. So I kind of had this expectation that he was going to do something with this role, but I was not expecting him to do what he did with this role. My God.
It's so good.
Yeah. So good. We already talked about Colin Farrell as the Penguin.
Yeah. Yeah,
Andy Serkis as Alfred. What did you think of that?
Oh yeah, that was pretty. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah,
and a different take on Alfred too, right?
Right.
A little more like, I could almost jump in the fight with you kind of thing.
Yeah. That's what it kind of felt like. I think they're trying to lean more into that whole Alfred was in the SAS stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that Andy Serkis is a good actor to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I was glad they didn't actually kill him off.
Me too.
Because he could come back if needed for. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that. I think it's kind of trite to kill him off. honestly. Yeah. You don't need to fridge somebody to make Batman more, you know, to galvanize the character. You don't need to, like, you know, kill him off, I don't think. Yeah. I think he's got enough things motivating him. So, do you have anything else that you want to add before we get down to our final recommendations?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that end again real quick. Just real quick. At the end of it, the Riddler makes a friend, and it's very obviously the Joker.
It's the Joker, yeah.
Which at the time I thought, okay, really, let's not do the Joker again. Guys, come on. Do we have to do the Joker every time?
Every go around, yeah.
Yeah, and I get it. They're eternally linked and blah, 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 and I get it, but we need something fresh. We need something new. I looked into it a little bit, and it turns out Matt Reeves is not going to be using the Joker. He does not want to use the Joker. It's just there to kind of, it's like a little call out to the comic fans.
He's in the insane asylum right now.
Right.
Right. Yep. He's with the other crazies. Right.
Yeah. He might get out for another time, but not for this movie series. Mm-hmm. All right. So we always do keep, rent, or return on for our scale. Where do you sit on this one, Paul?
Totally keep.
Totally keep.
Like, I think this stacks up against, it stacks up favorably against any other Batman film. I think at least right now, it stacks up favorably against The Dark Knight. Mm. I'd have to think about that in like a year to be sure, but like right now, fresh in my head, it stacks up favorably against Dark Knight too. So it's absolutely a keep for me.
Nice. Yeah, I'm with you. It's 100% a keep for me as well. I would say that my gut reaction, my knee-jerk reaction is it's just as good as The Dark Knight. I would probably want to see this again a few more times and make that judgment like you were just saying.
Yeah.
I think that I have recently watched The Dark Knight, and I watched it probably 2 weeks before I saw this movie. And so for me to be able to say that, I can say confidently as of right this moment that I feel like it stacks up really, really well against The Dark Knight. I think that it's in the running for best Batman film of all time.
Yep.
So which is, I mean, that's when you're saying something is stacking up against The Dark Knight, that's what you're saying. It's in the running for best ever. So guys, no mistake. This is one of those movies that you're missing out if you don't see it, honestly. So, well, Paul, thanks for coming in and rescuing me. Paul, I guess.
Yeah, just stepping in spousal wise again.
Right.
Which of course I will.
Yeah, absolutely. You're my podcast spouse. So the next week, my actual spouse will return. We're going to be doing a Netflix movie called The Guilty with Jake Gyllenhaal. Did you see that movie?
No.
You hear about that one? It's an interesting one. I don't want to say too much about it, but it's one of those movies that an actor makes because they want to show how good they are at being an actor. like All Is Lost or Buried or something like that, right? Like, I want to prove that I'm not just this guy. I want to be able to show you that I can be an actor.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I totally get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good luck, Jake. Hope it comes out good. I hope Rich and Jen don't pan you, but maybe they will. I don't know.
I don't know. We'll maybe find out. We'll find out next week, and so will you.
Tune in.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week here on the couch.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to A View from the Couch. We value your feedback. Please consider leaving us a review on Podbean, iTunes, or your preferred podcast listening app.
You can reach us on Facebook by searching at A View from the Couch, on Twitter at View_Couch, or by emailing us at aviewfromthecouch@yahoo.com. Thanks again for listening. Bye.
See ya.